Blog Talk Radio.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another segment of the Law of Attraction and Love radio show. Well, today we have a very special guest. If you were with me a few weeks back, I had interviewed one of my teachers, Satyen, and one of his teachers was David Data. Now, David is a really hard guy to pin down. he's written a lot of very, very interesting books, best-selling author of multiple books, and the Way of the Superior Man and Finding God Through Sex are just two of the books he's written. But I was able to get an agreement from his therapist that works with him, Michaela Bohm, to join us on the show today. So we're still waiting for Michaela to call in so we can talk with her. But if you were in the show, listening to the show a couple of weeks ago, you'll notice we talked a lot about the masculine and the feminine and the needs of each of those energy fields. And for most men, needing to be in alignment with that masculine energy in relationship to the female or the feminine energy, so that there's something called polarity. There's a pull between masculine and feminine. And when you have that polarity, the differences, what you have is a lot of attraction. So what we talked about a couple of weeks ago is that a lot of couples get into a relationship and it's very fiery and passionate and there's a lot of attraction, a lot of sexual attraction early on in the relationship, and then it starts to get watered down over the years, or maybe even months. Starts to get watered down. Things, you know, kids, jobs, you know, and then the passion and even the sexual tension starts to fade. And in this day and age, kind of the New Age movement has created equality, so-called equality, between males and females. And that has actually caused a decrease in the polarity between the masculine and the feminine. So when, you know, the female is working outside the home and bringing in the bacon, sometimes we have the guys, you know, being husbands at home, and there's nothing wrong with that. The only thing is sometimes it's almost too equal. You know, everybody does exactly the same thing. We each pay the bills equally and we share the responsibilities, and, you know, whoever decides who goes out to dinner, we all take turns. You know, then it kind of gets all blended. The masculine and feminine energies don't get polarized, and then we lose the sexual attraction. So one of the purposes of our call today is to ask the source of some of this information how it is that we can get into this polarity, and how sex can be an actual channel to finding God. Because a lot of people, when they read this title, are like, whoa, that's almost sacrilegious. What does sex have to do with finding God? So, since we don't have Michaela on the line, I'm thinking that she doesn't know that she's supposed to call in. So let me see if I can find her here. Let's try her a couple of numbers. We're going to have to do this old-fashioned style. I'm going to call her on the regular phone and see if we can get her to call in. If not, then we'll have to do it through the regular phone lines. So appreciate your patience, everyone.
This is Michaela.
Hey, Michaela, it's Dr. Karen.
Hello, I'm just trying to call you.
Oh, good. Well,
yes.
Are you?
Can I call you in?
Yes.
Okay.
So do you know which number to call and then to press 1 after?
I will do that as we're speaking.
Oh, fabulous. All right, I'll hang up with you here. Thank you. All right, so mini technical difficulties, but that's okay. It's definitely worth it. So we've it's taken quite a bit of time to book Michaela on the show, and I know the information is very valuable, which is why we worked so hard to get her on our show today. So if you're interested in learning more about the information, you'll want to go to data.info. Oh, I think we have her here on the line. Let me unmute her. All right, it's just going to take a sec. while we do that. All right. There we go.
Hello.
Michaela, hello. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Good morning.
Well, I know. Yeah, well, you have a very, very busy schedule, so we feel very honored for you to spend some time with us today and to share with us some of the work that you and David do mm-hmm. in the world.
Well,
so,
thank you for having me.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Now, Michaela, you're the only therapist authorized to work with David, so you work very closely with him, and your training includes psychotherapy and behavioral sciences, yoga, somatic body work, so you're certainly, the work that you do is really up my alley. So tell me a little bit about, you know, what you do and what David and you do in your workshop.
Well, have you ever been at one of David's workshops personally?
No, I have not. I just read his work.
Oh, good. So, you know, there's a lot to be said, and you know, these exercises are very hard to explain. So, you know, to start out with, I don't know how much you want to go into details, but essentially, the basis of David's work is the practice of being with another person. So, meaning the connection and intimacy that happens between two people. And in his particular case, it's intimate relationship, so it's sexual intimate relationship, but also how we open or close towards anyone, you know, people we are romantically involved with or not. So the opening of the heart, the being with another person, the having a feeling sense of intimacy, and then how that translates into a relationship, both, you know, intimate and you know, in general. So David's workshops in many ways point towards the opening and the connect, and then for into the workshops it goes into polarity, sexual attraction, sexual polarity, the change of sexual energy, and then yogic sex, you know, as we go into the more advanced work.
Excellent. Now, when you teach couples or even singles in America, my sense is that there's a lot of sexual hang-ups that we have in North America, more so than in Europe. And how do you, what do you see from people, and then how do you shift that, or how do you help them shift that?
That's a big question, and yes, I agree with you. I think, you know, I'm European myself. I think that sex in general and, you know, all things of the sexual nature have, you know, the most kinks and closures, which is exactly why it's such a great place to enter. Because essentially, you know, the bigger picture of David's work is that sex and relationship with the other is a portal into the divine. So in the end, it's one way to get into, you know, the realms of feeling and light and consciousness and you know, I don't know how else to say it, the divine. So sex, because it has so much closures and kinks, of course, is kind of a great and fast way into it, because, of course, the more you're closed or kinked somewhere, the more potential for real openness and expansion there is. So, yes, people do have sexual hang-ups, and, you know, none of that's a problem, so to speak, because wherever you have that particular closure, there's also the space for really, you know, yogically opening through it. So it's much more a process of widening the channel and expanding something than it is about healing or, you know, solving something. It's really not about that.
Oh, that's really interesting. I've never heard it said that way, and it makes so much sense. As an acupuncturist myself, oftentimes we're doing acupuncture to open channels that are either blocked or closed.
Mm-hmm.
And it's not that the channels are wrong or bad. It's just that they just need some help and support. And then once you open those particular blocked or closed channels, then the entire organism improves.
Exactly.
Yeah, and that's what you're talking about, is that there, even though there are other avenues of connecting with the divine, that in a way, because we have so many sexual hang-ups, this is like a perfect door, perfect opening.
That's
wow, that's beautiful. I really like that.
Yeah. Well, there's a very, very specific distinction David makes that you might have heard or read about. It's essentially that there is three strains of how you can, you know, work with things. The first and most used one is essentially classic therapy, and that's both, you know, so for the physical and the emotional. So when you, let's say, had a childhood trauma, one way to go at it is, of course, that you go to a therapist and you start healing it. Therapy, both in the psychological realm, but also if you would, like, let's say, have broken your arm, you know, when you have freshly broken your arm, you need therapy. You don't, you know, you don't need to do anything but, you know, immobilize the arm, get a cast, then later on get physical therapy, strengthen the arm. That kind of a process is a therapeutic process. That's also true, let's say, with a sexual trauma or a sexual hang-up. So you could go to a classic therapist, and you could spend, you know, sometimes years working on the healing of a certain disposition.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sometimes necessary, but of course life doesn't stop while you're trying to heal something. And so, you know, a different approach, not better or worse, but just a different approach, is the approach that you just talked about, where you essentially know that there's an issue, but while you're healing it, you're also opening the channels of that. So let's say you have a broken arm, and now, you know, the acute stage is over and you can't really use the arm. You could still, let's say, dance or do yoga. You would just have to modify how you do it so that you don't hurt yourself, but that doesn't mean that you couldn't do certain things. And so that's the yoga or art aspect of, you know, what David talks about, where essentially you know that there are kinks and closures in your system, and while you're attending to them, you know, in a healing way, perhaps you are also opening the channel yogically, so that regardless of your trauma or your hang-up or your kink, you can you know, continuously give a little bit more of yourself and unkink it through opening the channel. And that process is not a healing process. It's essentially learning a different kind of language process, where you assume that whatever hang-up or kink you have will always be there, and instead of trying to make it go away or tend to it all your life, you're essentially learning a way to be with it and open it in a different way, so you can fully give yourself no matter what kink you have.
I see. So it's not about really judging that we have this kink and it's bad and trying to exercise it from our bodies. It's really working with it and integrating it and expanding.
Exactly. And if you're into acupuncture, and, you know, I'm sure you agree with me on this, it's like things don't go away. Anything that ever being embedded in the body as a pattern stays like that, and we can make patterns less accessible, or we can make them dormant, but we can never make them go away. And so it's a very different approach to just work with it and expand it and open the flow through that pattern more, because often, of course, where we have our greatest kink or our greatest closure, we also have you know, our greatest gifts right behind that.
Isn't that funny how that works?
Yeah.
That's so true.
Yeah. Which is usually why most people find ways, you know, when you look at people teaching things or people, you know, having certain professions, it's usually because they had a closure there, and one of the ways that, you know, they worked with it is they went in there. And then they learn how to give through that particular closure. And so that's a key piece of, you know, the many things that David uses in his workshops and in his teachings is exactly that. You essentially, in a yogic way, expand and bring light into the areas where you have closures, and then you just, you know, give your gifts through that instead of shying away and waiting till it's been healed.
Yeah, very, very different process. I certainly resonate with that in my own process of being chronically ill, and then so many gifts have come out of that, and that I've been able to, you know, teach and share with other people. I can see that completely, and it's great to see that transformation in my patients as well.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
And when you say, and just to clarify, for our listeners are from all over and all different walks of life and experiences, they may not be familiar with the term, you know, the yogic way of opening. So could you elaborate on that?
Sure. To say the yogic way really has nothing to do with yoga, how it is, you know, perceived in the West. So it's not about, you know, turning yourself into a pretzel. It's simply the process of, like you said, opening channels and widening your ability. So what I mean by yoga, you could also say art or, you know, any form of applying yourself in a way that the creative process is essentially what we would call yoga. So another way of saying that is any time you feel that you have something that, you know, holds you back or closes you down, and instead of shrinking away from it or pressing through it really hard, you essentially find that knot and you stay with it, you know, the same way you would in a yoga pose. And when that expands that pattern, that's a yoga.
Okay. So you're not shying away, but you're also not pushing through. I know that pushing through one very
exactly.
well.
Exactly. The pushing through, exactly. That then causes real injury, right? The shying away is just a closure and nothing happens. It's essentially that you find the very edge of wherever you are, and that's where you stay. And the way you stay there is essentially the same way that you would, let's say, you know, the reason we call it art sometimes is, like, for instance, if you're a concert pianist, right? So if you're a gifted musician, what you do is you essentially practice and apply yourself regardless of your state that particular day. So, you know, when you're, I don't know, Yo-Yo Ma, for instance, or whoever, and you have a certain gift, then when you practice and when you play whatever you need to play so that you stay up on your art, there's very little regard for how you feel that day, right? I mean, the same is true for people who are really, really great at sports. You just have a discipline where no matter what happens, you're going to practice the scales or practice the cello or run or, you know, gymnastics or whatever it is that you do that because you're committed to applying the very best of you, and so your personal disposition that day is not as important as the art or the sport or the whatever you produce. So the yogic process or the art process is a process where you do push yourself, but you don't push yourself over the edge because otherwise you get injured, right? So the pianist is gonna practice, but not to the point where the fingers break, right? But close to that point. Because art essentially in expansion. It's not in playing it safe.
Right.
Exactly, not like in therapy, in classic therapy, you would play it very safe, right? So if I'm healing myself through playing the piano, you know, and music is a vehicle of healing for me, then when I get up and my fingers hurt a little bit, I'll probably say, well, today is not the day, you know, my fingers hurt, I got to be careful, I don't want to traumatize myself, I'm not going to do this, right? But when I'm an artist and I'm about to go on stage and I want to give my fullest, my fingers hurting isn't going to keep me.
Right. Absolutely.
I don't know if that makes sense, but that's the distinction between classic therapy and art / yoga. It's like you essentially want to give of yourself so fully that you're going to push it to the very edge, and then you're going to kind of hang out at that edge so that you expand more and more without, of course, you know, totally injuring yourself, but also without backing off and being gentle.
It's almost like you might feel some, you know, we're saying minor discomfort, and that discomfort is that expansion out of your regular comfort zone.
Correct.
But just on that edge so that you don't, you know, injure yourself and then traumatize yourself in other ways, but also not shrink back either.
Sure, exactly. Well, that's why there is a place for therapy and there's a place for yoga in all of us, right? There's areas where we have to be careful that we don't re-traumatize ourselves, and then there's areas where we can expand through our, you know, hang-ups and traumas and whatever else there is into a much greater expression of ourselves. And the play of that and the knowledge of where you want to expand then makes for, you know, whatever you apply yourself or whatever practices you use.
I see. And how would, can you give us like a specific example in the realm of sexual relations, like how a couple would, you know, move forward or move beyond their comfort zone to be in more connection with the divine or God?
Do you have anything specific in mind? I mean, is there something that you could think of that you know of? You know, what would be a common hang up of, you know, somebody you know or that you want to have addressed? Because, you know, this is a case-by-case kind of a practice.
I see. Well, yeah, we could definitely run through some cases. Let's see. I have a couple of patients, and let me just generalize it here. One female is just, you had some surgery in the past, so she no longer has a uterus, and she has not felt sexual, you know, for a really long time, and although she loves her husband dearly and, you know, they want to stay together, that kind of thing, she clearly understands that he isn't, you know, getting any, you know, so they don't have sexual relations per se because she's not comfortable. She's, you know, she's not interested. She, you know, anything that they have tried in the past, she is uncomfortable physically, and so they just stopped having sex. But obviously, the husband is wanting sex, but she just isn't in that space. So I'm just curious as to how, you know, you would advise them or handle that.
Right. Well, see, this is a good specific example. You know, of course, this is different for each individual, but
right.
I don't know these people personally. But what I would do is I would find out by just observing them and by feeling how they're relating, where there are areas where they actually enjoy being intimate, because you know, sex, as you know, I mean, can be many different things, but sex doesn't always or isn't always intimate, right? I mean, there's people who have plenty of sex, but they have no real depth of connection, and then there's people who have massive depth of connection, and they don't necessarily have to have sex. And so the first step would be to find the areas where they can be deeply connected, where there can be polarity established and intimacy established, because you know, sex, the act of penetration, so to speak, is a very minor, you know, aspect of what a really good sexual exchange is. And you know, to elaborate on that a little bit, for I'm generalizing incredibly. This is not true for everyone, and, you know, I just have to start somewhere. But for for the feminine in a woman, the most important feeling to feel is that feeling of being felt and seen and met and then, you know, penetrated. And so the penetration is not necessarily a physical penetration. It's just the feeling that the man that you're with intimately knows what he's doing and is with you and can meet you somewhere and feel you and see you in a certain way. That makes for a great, you know, feeling of opening, and then with that sexual surrender is that feeling of being really felt and seen and met and held in a certain way. And when that's not there for whatever reasons, well, for most people it's simply, you know, we aren't taught these things. You know, we might come across them, you know, randomly or naturally, but we're not taught to connect that deeply before having sex. So, you know, in general, you shouldn't have sex at all till you can connect deeply heart to heart, body to body, and through your breath. So how I would start with a couple like this is simply by having them be together, look into each other's eyes, learn how to be with each other so that they both feel very present and connected with each other. Then probably start breathing with each other so that they get to feel each other through their bodies. Then touch, but only then, right? So there's many ways of getting people very intimately connected before there's even any sex. And then from that place of being very connected, and for him to feel that she's totally with him, and for her to feel that he's totally with her, at that point, then I would teach them how to have polarity, meaning for him to really hold whatever essence is most true of him, which is probably the masculine, but not always the case. And for her to really, you know, relax into being the feminine aspect. That then creates polarity, sexual polarity. So then you have two poles where you have a clear masculine and a clear feminine. And then from that place, sexuality and sexual play comes easy. So then at that point, you know, they can find out what can be done without her being in pain and you know, all of those things. So then it becomes more technical in the sexual realm. But that's far down the line. First comes, you know, a really strong depth of intimacy and connection. That often, particularly, you know, when we can't have sex, those things go because it feels like, you know, it naturally occurs in the sexual act. For some people, and if that's not possible, then most people don't know how to create that depth of connection.
Yes, it's true. But another patient of mine, whose husband had surgery on the prostate, and there's a high rate of erectile dysfunction after surgery, and there wasn't anything they could do. And unfortunately, in our medical system right now, the urologist just sort of shrugs, you know, their shoulders and says, well, sorry, you know.
Right.
And that's it. I mean, they don't get any counseling, no support, no referrals, and they're just left to go home with this and with no adequate support on now what do I do, because in most people's lives, they feel that penetration, the physical sexual act as the be-all and end-all,
exactly.
You know. Yeah.
Exactly. And, you know, I have quite a few men in my practice, a few couples in my practice, where the man had prostate cancer and prostate operations and can no longer have an erection, but there is, through, once again, breath and in more the bodily training of being there and penetrating and creating intimacy, several of those couples have actually more in-depth sex lives than they've had before, because the man really had to learn how to be with her in different ways. And yeah, it's, you know, it's never something that you want to wish on somebody, you know, when basic body function goes, but that can happen to all of us, meaning, you know, we get older, we get all kinds of conditions, so it's always a really good and important thing to learn the ways to still be there and still be connected and still be present with each other, so that, you know, when you're 95 and you're in a nursing home, you know, the touch of the hand can achieve the same kind of connection and depth that sex could, you know, and that's very possible.
Yeah, that's great. It's almost a shame that the average person, you know, isn't taught. I mean, it's not taught in school. It's not,
right,
you know, taught by our parents. And then when things like this happen, like a surgery, and then there's erectile dysfunction, that you and I, in the realms that we teach, can see this as a true opportunity, a calling to connect on a deeper level than maybe before.
Right.
But the average person isn't going to necessarily see that without support and help.
Right. Well, and of course, you know, it's always easy to say this when you're not that person, right? I mean, the thing that I really want to say about this is that for most men, you know, the erectile function and everything that comes with sex is such an incredibly big part of their lives that they, in many ways, identify through that. So when somebody kind of yanks your identity, it's very easy to just shut down and cope other ways, right? So, you know, I'm by no means saying this is an easy thing to deal with, but since, you know, these things happen, there is ways to learn how to be with that and make something with that has a very different kind of outcome. And it's also hard for the wives often, because that's how they've learned to identify their relationship, right? It's in the sexual act, in the sexual penetration. But there's, of course, so much more to this. And like I said, it's not only, you know, erectile dysfunctions. It's, like you said, hysterectomies. It's just people getting too frail or no longer capable of having actual, you know, body-to-body sex, but that doesn't mean things have to end at all.
Absolutely. And what about, what's your sense or opinion about teenagers and in our society, especially in North America, we're so inhibited about sex. I remember when I was in high school, which is a while ago, but when I was in high school, our sexual education was basically one or two classes on, you know, a cut view of the human body in half, and here are all the organs, and this is how somebody gets pregnant, and this is how you prevent pregnancy, and don't have sex.
Right.
I mean, that was the end of it. There was no actual teaching, and of course schools are not, you know, don't have the training to do this, but there's no training on this. So do you see, you know, teenagers, or how, if you did work with groups of teenagers, how would you coach them?
Well, you know, the thing that I want to say is that I don't have children of my own, and I also don't work with teenagers, so this is not my field by any means. There's, you know, great people who are in that field. My area is more the area of, you know, adults working out both their emotional and their sexual aspects. But ever so often, you know, I work with couples. One of the things I do quite frequently is I travel and live with couples, you know, a few days at a time, and work them through a whole process for like two or three days in their home. And so, you know, where you can really go in depth in all their, not only sexual behaviors, but in their relationship patterns. My background is, you know, is forensics and behavioral patterning. So that said, often then I come to households where there is teenagers, so I get to see how that, you know, how the parents' relationship and how their own relationship with sex and with, you know, with being in relationship forms. And absolutely, it would be great if people would get educated way earlier, and they don't. And at the same time, because the internet and being online and being, you know, God knows what, on Facebook and texting and all of those things happen, there's actually less availability for intimacy, you know, way less.
Okay.
I'm sure you've seen this as well as I have, where there's people sitting together on the table having a meal and everybody's texting. So the,
yeah,
you know, one thing, we're not even talking about sex yet. We're talking about the basic ability to connect with another, you know, feeling another, being with another, meeting another. That's where I would start personally, and whenever I have a chance, that is where I start with people, is their ability to actually unguard themselves enough that they even, you know, can hold eye contact, can feel what another feels and needs, and connect with that. That's the starting point for good sex and for good relationships.
Yes, and I know this is a common complaint with women, is that they'll have a very, you know, stressful, harried day. They're doing a million and one things, taking care of the kids, you know, and then the, you know, the husband at whatever it is, 9 o'clock, and I says, okay, let's have sex, and she's like, huh? You know,
exactly.
Like, I don't feel I've been supported all day. I've been running around. I'm exhausted. You know, how could you want to have sex? You know, I just don't, I'm not into it, because
right.
She hasn't felt nurtured, taken care of, seen, appreciated, heard.
Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
And that is the most common complaint. And, you know, one of the things that David is incredibly good at is detailing that particular process. And, you know, when I'm saying good at, very humorously point towards that, because essentially, you know, one of the things he says is that men are like blow torches while women are like crock pots. And so, and yeah, I particularly
love
that because it's so true. For a woman, the sexual readiness and the readiness to connect and want to be sexual is something that has to be heated up slowly. Once we're warm, you know, we can go for a long time, but it's not
right.
Something that can be turned on and off. While for men, and once again, we're generalizing here, right?
Generalizing.
For men, it's usually something that gets turned on really quick and then turned off really quick. And so, you know, the other piece to that is that, of course, for the masculine in a man, sex is what one does for stress relief and emptying the mind and body, and that has roots in the way we were patterned in the, you know, essentially in the Stone Ages, in the cave days. While for women, that isn't so, and so this whole drama that happens, you know, everywhere in daily life is exactly that. Women not feeling that they were properly warmed up, and men feeling like they're not getting what it takes for them to relax and release and connect. Because also the thing to know is that a way to a, you know, a woman's genitals is through her heart, while a way to a man's heart is through his genitals.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So those
yeah.
kind of never meet, right? So,
yeah.
So they, you know, to be very general about this, the way to go to make that gap happen is for the man in the relationship to start firing up the crock pot even a few days before sex happens, and that's fairly easy because most women are perfectly, you know, able to receive those tiny little warm-ups, so to speak. So that would be a phone call, or it would be a hug, or it would be a quick touch or an embrace or an email or whatever, just something that says, I'm feeling you, I'm with you, I'm looking forward to seeing you. You know, that kind of warm-up, so to speak, then allows for something else to happen at night.
Yes, absolutely. It's so funny because sometimes I find that it's kind of not a hard sell for the guys, but it's like they don't really get the connection. Like, I don't see what this has to do with sex at all.
Right.
But if they actually practice it and try it out, it has a huge effect. I remember my ex-husband once, I said something about, he was, I can't remember, cleaning up the kitchen or something, and I had said, you know, this is just as sort of sexually enticing for me as something else that he was going, you know, that he does. And he was like, cleaning up the kitchen, you know, like, what does that have to do with anything? But it was like, I felt like cared for, I felt nurtured, I felt, you know, he was contributing, he was, you know what I mean? So,
right.
These little things, and it doesn't have to be complex.
Right.
And I think the guys need to learn that, and maybe you can tell us how you counsel them, but how do you get them to sort of buy in, you know, to this? Because they're going to feel like they may feel like they're losing out somehow.
Right. Well, this is a topic we could go on for hours and hours. But I think the one thing that I want to say about this is that it's become kind of, you know, how in the, you know, up to the 50s, essentially men would make fun of women, right? And women were just these emotional nut jobs, you know, kind of cute, whatever, little woman. You know, the whole thing that happened before women's liberation. Now we have essentially the opposite phenomenon. You know, you have women get together and belittle their men.
Yeah.
And that's a socially accepted form of, you know, sport amongst women, and I'm including myself there, right? Because somehow we have figured out how emotionally stunted men can be, and so now we are the ones making fun of that. And so when you talk about how can men buy into it, the thing to really feel is that it's not natural for a man to do this. It's not that he's an idiot or he's mean or he doesn't want to. It's not how he's built. And so then the question is, why would he do it? Well, because one of the things that's most innate in men, believe it or not, is they want to handle things, deal with things, and fix things. And that's an incredibly good thing. So there's no man out there that doesn't want to do it right. And because that's a natural thing, right? You tell a guy you're lost, he's immediately going to pull up MapQuest and get you somewhere, because fixing things is what is very, very strong piece in any man, making things right. So we need to assume as women that men do want to get it right, but they need to be told in ways that they can actually do something with it. So one of the things to feel is that because men are not emotionally built the way we are, is when we make these things emotional, they can't work with them. So you know, if it's the end of the day and he wants to have sex and you don't want to have sex and you say something like, "You never feel me," but he's totally lost. That means nothing to him. But if you can communicate something like, I mean, like I said, I'm making very broad strokes, but something like, for me to feel like you're with me, I need you to do this, this, and this, right? Then he can go, oh, right, like you said with your ex-husband, he never connected how cleaning the kitchen made you sexually more available. And so that needs to be spelled out, so to speak. You have to remember, men work best with a manual. So emotional request doesn't really work. It works amongst women, but it doesn't work with men, once again, in general. So the spelling out of some of the things that are needed on the front end really helps. And then the other piece is, how do you make them buy into it, like you said? Well, when he does something that's actually along those lines, he has to feel your delight and how pleased you are with it.
Right.
So that's an operative thing. If you want your man to really meet you and be with you and do these things, when he does even the slightest bit of it, you have to show him that that's good.
Yes, that feedback, that real
that
quick.
Feedback, exactly. Mm-hmm. Then with that feedback, when he gets the feedback that this is good and this is working, he'll be more than happy to do more of it. Right? It's just when he does it and nothing happens, then it's like, well, so? Right? So it's not the, well, he does it all day and you don't react and then you give him sex in the evening. It's the, he does something and you react and then that makes him feel what's needed and then he can do more of that and then you relax more and so on and so on. So it's a mutual feedback mechanism, so to speak, between two people. So,
and it sounds like that sort of more immediate feedback is more valuable than sort of that sex reward at the end of the day.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You can't delay those things.
Right.
It's one of the hardest things, you know, to learn these days for us as women is that essentially the feedback has to be immediate. We've been trained now for a while to not show certain things and not to express certain things because it's kind of, you know, in the masculine world, in the workplace, that's not all right. But with your intimate partner, the feedback has to be immediate. Otherwise, there's, you know, just nothing happening.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's excellent. Yeah, and I certainly in practice have found that to be so true.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, how is the man supposed to know if he did? You know, if you have a conversation at one point that says something like, you know, making this up, you know, I'd like to be more sexually connected with you, but when I've done a whole day of running around and all of, and working and the kids and the this and the that and the meals, I'm not in the mood. So what I need from you is that during the day, ever so often, you remind me that there's something else happening between you and I that, and that way get me into the mood. And here are some of the things that would help. You know, then when he does them, he needs to know that he did them.
Mm-hmm.
He's kind of fumbling in the dark, which he is in the beginning, because once again, it's not natural
for
the male brain to work like that. So he needs to know, oh, that actually worked. And the best way to make him know that that actually worked is when you show delight, right? So it's not as valuable for, let's just say he goes and he washes the dishes. If you then come in and say, oh, you washed the dishes, thank you very much. You know, yeah, mm-hmm. That's fine, but it's not great. If you come in and you show your delight through your body, that's exactly what's going to make him do anything that you know, is required for you to have that kind of reaction.
Now, can you elaborate on showing delight through your body, what that actually looks like?
Well, if you walk into the kitchen and the dishes are done and the work surfaces are clean, there's probably a part of you that wants to go, oh, thanks, right? Like there's something that happens when you allow for that delight to kind of flow through your body.
Flow through your body,
right?
Yes.
So it's less talk and head and it's more allowing your body to show a little bit of what happens, which is, oh, thank you, right? I mean, it doesn't mean that you can't say thank you, but it's more like a in the body thank you than a, well, thank you, right? It's like there's something that comes with it.
Yeah, I see what you mean. Yeah, because we can really stunt our emotional reaction, and we're kind of taught this, unfortunately.
Exactly.
You know, to be proper, you know.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
But, you know, and that propriety, of course, has a good place in the workplace and around your children and things like that. But amongst intimate partners, it really doesn't, because it makes for the boring, you know, kind of talk relationship. And
gotcha.
There's no spark in that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Excellent, excellent advice. And I wanted to touch a little bit on, and this may or may not be, you know, in the realm of who you coach or counsel, but in terms of gay relationships, either lesbian or, you know, homosexual males, there's obviously polarity as well, you know, for them to be able to, you know, have that charge between them. Do you find anything different at all in those relations, or it's pretty much similar?
I would say it makes no difference if you are, you know, essentially in the realm of what David talks about, it makes no difference if you're gay or straight. It's essentially, are you of a masculine or are you of a feminine essence? So it's really the essence. That's why sometimes when we say men and women, it's not accurate. There could be, you know, you could be a man with a very strong feminine essence. You could also be a woman with a very strong masculine essence. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's no better or worse there. It's just what makes you the deepest and the widest human being, so to speak, is you living true to your essence. And so in a gay relationship, let's just say there's, you know, two men in a relationship, the fact that they have sexual attraction to each other means that one of the two has a feminine essence and one of the two has a masculine essence, more masculine or more feminine. And that makes for natural polarity. You can also learn and develop your polarity and play them more consciously, but mostly, you know, same with two women, mostly in a lesbian relationship, one person has a predominantly masculine essence and one person has a more feminine essence, and the play and the excitement and the sexual attraction comes from those two poles. So then with two men in relationship, the exact same things apply as in a, you know, in a relationship between a man and a woman, because there again, one has a more feminine essence, one has a more masculine essence. The more feminine essence is always going to want depth of relationship and connection, and the more masculine of in the relationship always wants more direction, purpose, knowing where to go, also is less emotional about things and less wanting to connect, right? I mean, these are, like I said, very general things. And so hence the play, and you know, makes no difference. My private practice is actually in West Hollywood, which is definitely one of the most, you know, gay and lesbian friendly towns probably in the U.S. aside from San Francisco. And so I get to see and also work with people, you know, in all the shades of what's possible. And it always boils down to the same thing. The feminine in us wants certain things. The masculine in us wants certain things. The combination of those two makes for sexual polarity.
I see. And so each of us has different degrees of masculine and feminine, and we can consciously nurture our the essence that is our main essence, right?
Well, I would say we have an essence, right? So what that means is you are either more feminine in your essence or you're more masculine in your essence. On top of that, then your upbringing, your conditioning, your childhood likes or dislikes, your traumas or whatever you want to call it, make for a certain relationship to that essence. So, like, for instance, if you are if you're feminine essence, and for whatever reason that was not considered okay when you were a girl, either because there was sexual transgression towards you or simply you were required to be smart and you know, more in the masculine realm because that's what your, like, let's say, father wanted, then you can construct kind of a shell on top of your natural essence.
Mm-hmm.
And so you might become, you know, the scientist woman who really has a very strong feminine essence, but over it is a layer of masculine shell for the sake of being accepted and loved in a certain way. So then what you're going to attract, of course, is a man who has a masculine essence that's been layered over with a feminine shell, because once again, it's all about polarity. So wherever you are is what you're going to attract. But then typically what happens at one point, you want to be closer to your essence. And then, of course, if your partner isn't going closer to his essence, you can't do that. And that's usually where trouble in relationships starts. You know, when you want to move closer to your essence and the other person doesn't or doesn't know how. Or doesn't, mostly it doesn't know how. So then that's how you start, you know, developing yourself more. You come closer to your essence. And how you know that you're closer to your essence is essentially, I don't know how to say this, else your heart's happy, right? Or when you're a man, your consciousness feels, you know, I don't know how to say this since I am not a man, but you're rested in your consciousness and you're rested in your purpose and where you're going. While when you're a feminine essence, where you're going is not nearly as important as how you're connected with someone, you know, how relationship moves through you.
Right. Well, just when you're saying all this, I remember when I was a teenager, I was very much into, you know, hairstyles and makeup and, you know, I get 17 magazine, look at all the clothes, you know, that kind of thing. And my dad was, he would cut pictures out from his magazines that he thought I'd be interested in, whether it be hair or whatever. He was really, you know, sweet. And the funny thing is I said, well, I think I'd really like to be what I now call an esthetician, but a, you know, beauty salon person. And well, my mother had a hissy fit. She says, you do not get A pluses in school to be a hairdresser. You're way too smart for that. You know, you're going to college, you know, university, and, you know, and they didn't quite, I mean, she didn't quite say you're going to be a doctor, but it was sort of hinted at, like, gee, look at all the other Chinese kids, you know, that our friends, they all went to med school or they were lawyers or they were dentists.
Right.
And especially two girls that became, you know, doctors. That was like, wow, look at them, you know.
Right.
So I totally, you know, got that masculine shell.
Right, exactly.
And, yeah.
Like, go somewhere, do something, be someone.
Yeah.
It wasn't
be a boss. So,
exactly. And but what probably felt a lot better in your body was to play with color and light and texture and hair and makeup. And so your essence is a feminine essence. And so, you know, it's totally good and fine and needed that we are capable of applying ourselves in the masculine. That, you know, that's the way it is these days.
Right.
What we as women have acquired is the ability to play in both realms. But where our heart's most happy is typically where our essence is.
Mm.
And for most of us, that's feminine. Not for all of us. There's women who are most happy because, you know, in their masculine essence, because that's their essence. And, you know, and they have learned then to apply themselves in the feminine realm, but that's not where they're most happy. So it's really, and when I'm saying most happy, I'm not only talking personal happiness, I'm talking about being able to give your gifts fully so that, you know, when you die, you have brought, you know, to your children, to your friends, to your family, what it is that you've got, right? That's in there, that's meant to be given. And so in that realm, essentially, you are, you know, you're either in the feminine essence or in the masculine essence. And cultivating those essences then allows for a more, you know, a fuller giving of yourself in a way.
Absolutely. And we have less than a minute left. I want to make sure that people know who are listening to this show how to contact you and how to learn more from yourself and from David's work.
So can
you give us those contacts?
So you know, I'm just going to tell you a few things that are happening both on my end and on David's end. So David's been, you know, on the writing sabbatical for a while, and there'll be there haven't been any workshops for almost a year, and so there's going to be 2 weekends and an intensive towards the end of the year, one in October, 1 weekend in October, 1 weekend in November, and then a 7-day intensive, which goes very much in depth in November as well. And all of those events can be found on David's website, which is data.info, DEIDA.info. And then I can be reached at Michaela@data.info. Michaela is spelled like Michael with an A at the end, so MIHAELA@DEIDA.info. So that's my personal email address. And I offer phone sessions, which are usually an hour long for, you know, anything that's in this realm. But I also teach women's workshops where we essentially go into how to really work with, you know, your essence, come closer to your essence, feel the things that need to be felt so that there's more of that there, and then how to bring that to men. And then, you know, lastly, I do these couples intensives where I travel and actually stay with people. And I think that about covers it.
Yeah, well, that sounds really neat. The couple intensives.
that's
wonderful.
A fun process.
Oh, yeah, that is absolutely wonderful. Well, Michaela, I appreciate you so much for spending this time with us, and you've given great value to us, and certainly on behalf of all my listeners and readers, we wish you the very best, and I guess until next time.
Thank you, Karen. I hope you have a great day. Thank you to everyone out there, and we'll, I'm sure, we'll connect again.
Yes, absolutely. Thank you so much. Bye
Thank
for now.
You. Bye.